My father in the Lord, Pastor James, once said, the sermons or the messages or the words that you share with other people, the ones that will stick are the ones where you can share from your own life and explain, no, not explain, impress upon them the truth of it in your own life. Because there's a power that comes with the raw emotion and the depth of the struggle, the depth of the pain, and the depth of the victory, too. So today I am going to preach on beauty. Beauty has always been a four-letter word to me. It has been a horrible word. It has been something I have strived for my entire life ever since I found out it was something that, according to everyone else, I did not have. It is something that has perverted my entire life, fueled my fears, my anxieties, my depression in previous years, and has fueled my eating disorder for over 3 decades, and God is making me come to terms with it finally. I wanted to know why I am so broken, why I am at my core fractured. I am double-minded when I think about myself. I hear what God says, I hear what other people say, and very obviously, I have chosen what the majority has said to me instead of what God has said to me, which is, I'm sorry, look at the world we live in. So I was telling the girls, Christy Satterfield came and gave her testimony a week ago Tuesday. There was not a person in here she did not minister to in some way, in such a life-changing way. But we all didn't receive the same word. She spoke to each different person, or should I say, God took her words and spoke to each one of us differently. For me, she made one comment. She said that she had come to love every ounce of herself. And God used that word to point out to me how I had never and still could not do that. And God revealed to me at that moment my self-hatred, my self-loathing. When you have a hole in you like that, I would describe other people you'd try to, codependent people would try to love other people so that they have a hole in them and you're trying to fill them up, but they it's like having a bathtub with a hole in it and no plug. Doesn't matter how much you pour into them, it will just drain out, because that brokenness, that lack of belief that they could ever be loved or accepted, denies them the ability to hold on to and accept and be changed by the love that people or God would offer them. Am I making sense? Definition of beauty. Beauty is commonly defined as a combination of qualities such as shape, color, or form that pleases the aesthetic senses. Aesthetic just means you like it. Especially the sight or a beautiful or pleasing thing or person in particular. This common definition of beauty is defined as something that pleases the senses. Since it pleases the senses, it is subject to opinion, which makes it not subject to measurement. The question then becomes, who defines that standard? That's what this message is about. Who defines the standard of what beauty is? And after Christy had shared what she shared, and I had this aha moment of how really, I mean, I knew I was messed up, but boy, that one hit home. I realized that I did not know how God sees me. I had never, ever asked. I mean, I know how God sees me on the inside. But I came to ask, How does God see me on the outside? I want to see myself as God sees me on the outside. I had never asked that question. So it drove me into the Word to ask what God sees when He looks at us. Before I do that, I want to talk about beauty here on earth. Beauty in our society and our culture. Beauty is very obviously in the eye of the beholder. Everybody has their own particular type, right? Like you maybe, for girls, you have Brad Pitt show up, and I didn't know anybody couldn't like Brad Pitt, you know, but I got some people who think, I think my daughter, she doesn't think anything about him. Then you got Angelina Jolie. I can't see how anybody would think she is not beautiful. But do you guys remember the older ones in here, Natasha Kinski? Woman Natasha Kinski, I think that was her name. She was marked as the most beautiful woman in the world. She was in some Dudley Moore movie or something else. She was Russian. She thought she was the ugliest thing in the world. And tell you the truth, when I looked at her, I could not see how they could possibly, in my eyes, make her the most beautiful woman in the world. Beauty is completely subjective. And in my eyes, when I've actually looked at it, you know what beauty is most of the time? Symmetry. Symmetry. Eyes are the same and even. Ears are the same. The face is even. The body is even. Think of someone who has a tumor or something or a goiter on their face. All of a sudden, everything's distorted. Maybe it pushes over and their eyes and their mouth and everything else, right? And all of a sudden, they become less, quote unquote, beautiful because the symmetry is off, right? That's all it is. So that's why when people are disfigured, something's off. You look like a Picasso painting, okay? Some people love Picasso paintings. But beauty is completely and utterly subjective. I know one girl who she only liked tall, thin, blonde men. Well, why is that any different than a big old teddy bear guy over there, you know, who's just really cute? Completely subjective. Now, this makes it even worse. Now, I have dealt with my eating disorder since I was in high school. And if I look back in the 1400s, there's a Jewish word called zoftig, which means curvy, large, or whatever. I've always been zoftig. Very rarely, maybe for a couple of years here and there, I might have not been zoftig. But in the 1400s, I could have been a pinup girl. Okay? Because in the 1400s, that's what you were supposed to look like. Okay? So in that age, I would have been beautiful in society. Now, I looked at the most interesting thing, how the definition of beauty has changed in the 1900s to the 2000s. Okay? Go on a little journey with me. 1900s to 1910s, the ideal of femininity was depicted as slender and tall, but with a voluptuous bust and wide hips. 1920s, the flapper looked like an immature young woman who was scantily clad and had little regard for uptight norms. The appearance was of boyishness and androgynous youth, which means neither girl nor boy. Small top, straight figure, and let's see. Oh, bras were made so they'd work to flatten you. Okay? Now, this is just 20 years after, before, where busts were the big thing. 1930s to 40s. In contrast to the flapper, now advertisements told women how they could avoid a too skinny look. In this era, they were supposed to be curvaceous and emphasize their feminine figure. Now, the normal of the size of the women back then was that by BMI, it says body mass index 23.6. That's basically 5.6, me, and 142 pounds, okay? Which would be about 7 pounds over what our doctors say is the right height and weight. As Garfield says, I'm not overweight, I'm under tall, okay? But it started comparing the average woman to the size of the celebrities. And whereas a BMI was 23.6 in the 1930s, 40s, it was a little bit more than Barbara Stanwyck and Lena Horne, who were 18 and 20. It was a gap, but it wasn't a huge gap, okay? The ideal of beauty was not so far removed from everyday standards. 1950s, the ideal body image for women was a fuller figured post-war. So we're talking Marilyn Monroe, who, by the way, was a size 14. A hot woman, size 14, go figure. And Grace Kelly. However, in the 1960s, thin and androgynous went back to like the flappers, where everybody looked like a teenage girl before she developed, or a little boy. And then towards the end of the 60s, it became hippies. So it was a little more curvaceous and some long hair. But are you following me, how it just keeps, the mark keeps moving? 1970s went to Twiggy. Anybody ever heard of Twiggy? Now the average, this is when anorexia nervosa first started in 1970s with the advent of Twiggy, who had a body mass index of 15. You were supposed to look anorexic, okay? This is when Karen Carpenter died after a decade of starving herself to death. This is also when diet pills hit the big time and amphetamines. So now you start taking drugs in order to be thin. Now in the 1980s, they take the thin with the supermodels and the hard bodies. Now you weren't just supposed to be thin. Now you were supposed to be toned and have muscle and have a six pack. Just raising the bar a little, aren't we? At this point, in the 80s, 60% of Playboy magazine models weighed 15% less than the healthy average weight for their size. 15% less than the healthy weight for their size. 1990s, increasingly thin look, yet with large breasts, as well, popularly depicted by Pamela Anderson on Baywatch. Pamela Anderson became the archetype to which we were supposed to compare ourselves now. So it was this combination of stick thin, big top, right? Think of Barbie dolls. So by this point, you're supposed to have a bony appearance, except for on top. And by the year 2000, the situation was more dire than ever. Women had an average BMI of 27.5. So they were left to compare their bodies to Keira Knightley, body mass of 17.2, and Natalie Portman, body mass of 19.5. Okay? So we're talking about like a third less of a person. That's what the goal has been, and the demand has been on us women. I mean, men too. I mean, you're supposed to be ripped, you're supposed to have the six pack, you're supposed to be all muscular. This is what we see, this is what is depicted to us on the media, and this is the standard by which we judge ourselves and we judge others. Well, I mean, when you grow up, how do you learn what's right and wrong? How do you know what's pretty and what's not pretty? There's some things innately, you just like something. But the rest of it is training. You learn to hate yourself. You learn to say, I'm not enough. In China and Japan, they never had a problem with weight until Western media came over. And now 29% of Chinese women think they're too fat. Elsewhere, do you know in Nigeria, there is a business dedicated to helping people put on weight? Offering a place where they can do nothing but eat and sleep. In Mauritania, young girls are encouraged to eat to gain weight in order to be more attractive to potential partners. And in the island nation of Tonga, 90% of the population is overweight, which is considered a status symbol. In Cape Town, South Africa, 2/3 of teen girls perceive excess weight as a sign of happiness and wealth. There are some tribes in India, in Africa, where how big you are defines your status because it shows you are successful enough that you have enough food, and however much food you have and eat, that shows how successful you are. Another study showed that after women were shown media images depicting the modern thin ideal, they had an increase in anxiety, depression, anger, and dissatisfaction with their bodies. You see what we live in? See what we're raised in? How we're brainwashed from the very beginning? It's everything to us. Now, I know that every time I look in a mirror, I hate this mirror right here. This mirror right here, I don't think it's even right. Because I can look in some other mirrors and I don't look that wide, okay? But I know that I will go and look in a mirror, and it just hit me yesterday. I went after I swam, and I went and I looked in the mirror sideways. And God said, what are you comparing yourself to? First time I'd asked myself that question. What are you comparing yourself to? Well, pretty much the pictures that show the before and the after on all those ads about losing weight, right? That's what I'm comparing. That is my standard. I dare any of you to tell me that's not your standard, what you see all the time, what you're told all the time. I am comparing myself with an image I have seen in the media somewhere, and I haven't been able to be satisfied without it. Because unfortunately, almost without exception, every significant person in my life has told me that my lack of beauty was an issue and would cause people to not want to be around me. I'm going to read you some things some other women wrote. I believed that outward beauty, my body, was all that was valuable about me to anyone, especially men. I chose to take advantage of that to get attention I so desperately craved. I became a sexual addict. Another woman. I have a beautiful sister whom I adore, but I am plain. I have always believed myself to be inferior and that I must perform to be accepted by others. I see the beautiful people get the breaks in life. I just accept that I won't, and I am in bondage to my perception of my appearance. Could have put my name there, except I don't have a sister. Another person, all my life I have believed that my self-worth was based on my appearance, and of course I never looked like the world said I should, so I have always had a low self-worth. I developed eating disorders, am a food addict, and struggle in my marriage with the perception that I am not attractive and that my husband is always looking at other women who are attractive to him. Now, my husband doesn't look, but still makes me wonder. And that is unfortunately very true for most people. Physical attraction is extremely important to them. And so if we want to be wanted by someone else, we must meet their beauty expectations or possibly be ignored or abandoned. Rare is the exception of people who look beyond physical beauty to the integrity or intelligence or kindness or other virtuous characteristics within a person. If you in any way become unattractive to them, they believe they have a right to withdraw from you. Isn't that true? But they are wrong. They are actually not being godly or Christ-like. God sees the spirit, and he does not care about outside looks. I'm going to read you some scriptures. 1 Samuel 16:7. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. I'm going to repeat that. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Right there, we have a division in standard. We're going to have to make a choice somewhere along the line. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Proverbs 31:30. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting. If beauty is a standard, then the standard not only changes, it disappears. A real standard never changes. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Notice that beauty is always given to women. There is no talking. Well, there's a couple of times God mentions a handsome man, but for the most part, the burden of this is on women. 1 Peter 3:3 and 4, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it would be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. 1 Timothy 4:8, physical exercise has some value, but spiritual exercise is much more important, for it promises a reward in both this life and the next. 1 Timothy 2:9, likewise, also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. Now this is interesting. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. He created us in his own image, but his own image is both male and female. That doesn't normally exist in our society. Either you're one or the other. Isaiah 53:2, he grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. Who is that about? Jesus. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. Doesn't say he was ugly, but he wasn't beautiful. His outside, that is the only description we have of Jesus. Do you think there might not be a reason why there is not a single description of Jesus's physical appearance? It was nothing to boast about. He was ordinary. He wasn't maimed or disfigured. He wasn't gorgeous. He was just ordinary. He had the Spirit on him. Yes. That's the only verse in the Bible about Jesus' physical form before his death and resurrection. Beauty in God's eyes comes from within. Nothing in a person's outward appearance impresses God. Nothing in a person's outward appearance impresses God. It's a non-entity. It's not even a card on the table.
It's all on the inside.
It's all on the inside. It actually goes even more specifically. Have you ever met somebody who is very good looking? And then they open their mouth. And somehow their attractiveness just kind of wanes. It might be foul mouth. It might be pride. It might be whatever it is. They say something ugly about someone else. And immediately you're like, oh, they're not so hot as I thought. Right? But there's also other people who are not physically beautiful, who they open their mouth and you feel loved, you feel accepted, you feel the presence of Christ, and they become so beautiful to you, so attractive. Think about a child. You have a child. The child's born with a deformity. Is that child any less beautiful to you? No! That is your child. That child is beautiful because you love him. Right? Now, there was an article that was written by a man, two men, about beauty. And the thought that the pressure on women who are supposed to look nice for their husbands, which always makes me laugh because I think, I don't see the husband dressing up for the wife. I mean, if we did that, we'd run around in our underwear too, you know? So, which might be good or bad depending on what our frame looks like. So, but that there are many men who believe that if they're no longer attracted to their wife, that's reason enough to leave them. Move on. Interesting. We are called as men to be faithful the way Jesus is faithful to his bride. And his bride, frankly, stinks. His bride is the church. Do we act right? Do we look right? He's coming back for a sinless, stainless bride. Are we that now? We are not that attractive. It says Jesus died to make us attractive, according to Ephesians. We actually, when we're in Christ, we put on Christ. We wear his righteousness. What is beautiful in God's eyes? Recognizing the qualities God has cherished in the lives of other people is one way to determine his concept of beauty. Noah's implicit trust in God led him to construct a gigantic boat miles away from water. Abraham trusted God's promise so implicitly that he would have sacrificed his son of promise without hesitation. Moses yielded total control of his life to God and became the man of meekness. David gave his whole being to doing the will of God. No consequence or shameful treatment could keep Daniel from reverencing his God. Peter, Paul, Barnabas, and Timothy were ruled by God in every consideration and decision. They were totally focused upon Jesus' will as they shared the gospel with all. In all these qualities, God saw great beauty. In the song, how beautiful the feet that bring the good news to everyone else. While all these people were beautiful to God, virtually nothing is known about their physical appearance. It was not their physique or stateliness, but their faith and service that made them beautiful. The same was true of God's beautiful women, Rahab, Hannah, Ruth, Deborah, Mary of Bethany. Those noted for physical beauty were often in great spiritual disappointments. Rebecca was very beautiful, but she was also a deceiver and a manipulator. Saul was a man of physical beauty, but his disobedience against God hurt the nation of Israel. God gave everybody Saul as a king because the people of Israel did not want to have God as their king. They wanted a king like everybody else. So he gave him a man who was a head taller than everybody else and very handsome, who in the end went crazy because God took his spirit off of him, because he disobeyed God. He sacrificed, and just to explain that in passing, in the Old Testament, you could be a king and you could be a priest, but you could not be both. A king did one thing, and the only person who could do sacrifices for the Lord was a priest. Saul kept waiting and waiting for Samuel to come to do an offering after a battle. He got impatient. He did the offering himself. God removed his spirit from him. He went crazy. And his lineage, his descendants, were removed. That's why that happened. God's ideal for beauty is Christ, who loved the Father over all others and was obedient unto death. The physical appearance had nothing to do with why God loved him. Now, this is interesting. Think of Adam and Eve in the garden. What were they wearing when they were walking around the garden with God? Nada. Nothing. Naked. How'd they feel about being naked? They didn't even think about it. It's just they were. This is how they were made. This is how they were. You don't hear God or Adam or Eve even discuss what any of them looked like. You don't know what Cain and Abel looked like. You don't know what these people look like, do you? It was never an issue. You with me so far? At what point did they take a look at themselves and decide they were naked and ashamed? They ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and disobeyed God. They sinned. They took all the time when they were in the garden. Do you think they were looking at each other? They were looking at God. They always had their eyes on God. They always trusted God to provide all of their needs. They were perfectly in faith, right? They took their eyes off God. They took their eyes on the thing that they lusted after. They disobeyed God. They ate it, and all of a sudden it says their eyes were opened. They swapped faith in God for the knowledge of the rules of what's right and what's wrong, where they now had to make all the decisions of what's right and wrong instead of trusting God, listening to Him, and just obeying Him. That's all another sermon. At that moment, all of a sudden, they looked at themselves. And what they saw disgusted them. God formed them by hand. And what they saw disgusted them. They were ashamed. They had to cover themselves up. This is important. When sin came in, man started hating his own appearance. Is that amazing? I'd never seen that before. That's why many of us are consumed with whether or not we match the standard of beauty around us. We are afraid we will never really be loved here on earth unless we are beautiful in the eyes of others. God's love and acceptance of us is not real or important enough. Or we have focused our vision on ourselves or others around us instead of on God. That is a problem we need to deal with, because as long as our self-worth depends on the ever-changing standard of beauty and upon acceptance by people who live by that standard, we will feel rejected and unacceptable. However, God sees our outsides, but He doesn't care about our outsides. God's not blind. He knows exactly what we look like. But He doesn't care. 2 Corinthians 4, therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away. From the moment we're born, we may be growing, but we are devolving the entire time. We are getting closer to death the entire time. Yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. Our spirit is the opposite of our flesh. It actually grows. It is moving towards something. It is evolving towards the full measure of Christ and being completely Christ-like. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, because what is unseen is eternal. So God sees the outside, but it doesn't matter. Have you ever been in a place or in a workplace? I was in a workplace once, and I was kind of like the manager over all these people. And they came and they went. It was at the census, so we had different people coming in and out. I looked at every single one of them. One day, I was doing some timesheets and I called out and I said, that can't be right. That person put so many miles or so many hours. And immediately from another table, a blonde guy said, well, that would be, and he gave me the exact calculation or what it was. Well, that would be like, I don't know, 100 miles a day or 100 miles a minute or something like that. And I stopped and I'm like, who said that? That was brilliant. And I'm looking, and I saw him for the first time. That caught my attention. He was an architect. There were doctors, lawyers. We were all out of work, and we were working for the census. But that was the first time I saw him. You with me? Have you ever been around a group of people, and you've seen them? Swear to you that all the people I work with and have worked with for the past year and a half, I couldn't tell you the color of their eyes if you had me at gunpoint. I look at them every day. I don't see their eye color. You with me? God looks at us. He looks at our outside, but He does not see our outside. Now this is where He brought it all together. God looks past what we are to the individuals that we can become. Now, Jesus called Simon Peter. Now, what was Simon's personality? his level of stick-to-itiveness, his constantness. It was nothing. He was like blown by the wind back and forth all the time. He would say, I will live with you. I will go to the depths for you. And then he goes running away like a little girl. And he lies to a servant girl. I don't know that man. He cuts off a servant's ear. Just however he feels. That's how he acts. He was not a rock solid person. And yet Jesus called him Peter, Petra, little rock, because he saw in the future what Peter would be when he was filled with the Holy Spirit, when he was converted, when he was a little Christ, a Christian. You with me? So every time Jesus looked at Simon, he saw Peter. God is outside of all time and space. He sees yesterday, today, and tomorrow all in the same glance. There is no such thing. So when God looks at us, he looks and he looks at our outside, but you know what he sees? How we will be in the end. What is the end? How we will be when we're in heaven. That blew me away. He sees us in our spiritual bodies in heaven. He looks at us, but he sees us as we are finished. Now, the other thing is remember, when sin came in, it ruined us. Not only how we see ourselves, but all of the things we do to ourselves out of sin. Whether it's not taking care of our body because of addiction or smoking or drinking too much. Drinking too much ruins the liver. Smoking too much, you know, cancer, either of the throat or the tongue or the lungs. Eating too much, diabetes, cholesterol, heart problems. All of these things, problems with our bodies, are due to sin in either the natural world or sin in our own lives as we destroy our bodies. When we are in heaven, our spiritual bodies are free of all of the effects of sin. They're removed. No glasses. No dieting. We will be, our spiritual body will be what it would be without the effect of sin on it. That's amazing to me. I never saw that before. So when God looks at you, he doesn't see your clothes, your body. He sees you as you will be, as if you are in heaven right now. To me, that's a comfort. I used to talk with my daughter and her friends as teenagers. You ever seen a teenage love triangle? She likes him. No, he likes her. She likes him. He likes someone else. Now, I'm going to need some help with this. Laura, come up here. Chad, come up here. Sean, come up here. All right. You here. Laura here. Sean, you there. All right. Now, here we go. Chad looks at Laura, sees beauty. He is attracted to her. He likes everything about her. He would like to, and these are all teenagers, he would like to ask Laura out, okay? Laura has a thing for Sean.
Not really, but
teenagers, okay? Sean. Sean, however, has a thing for Jamie.
That's right.
Now, this is what happens. Laura is crying and feels unloved, rejected, and unacceptable because Sean does not want her. Okay? However, there is another person who thinks she is the cat's meow. She is perfect. You follow? Now, Laura is here. Laura, why does she feel rejected and alone because Sean doesn't like her?
when someone else does. She's actually making a choice to base her self-worth on which person likes her. Right? Last thing. God, the world. Laura is looking at the world and its standard of beauty and lets it, if she doesn't match up to it, feels rejected, unworthy, unacceptable, discarded. Why? Because she has chosen that the world, that the people on this earth, that these people who judge my appearance are the ones who matter. You follow? But just like the teenager, she has the opportunity instead to make the decision to have her standard not be the world and not be men who depend on physical attraction and beauty all the time, but instead on Christ, who thinks she is perfect. God, who sees her as perfect in her heavenly spiritual body. She has that choice to make every time she gets up in the morning. Do I see myself as the world sees me? Standing, turning sideways, looking in a mirror, comparing myself to a before and after picture on a diet pill ad? Or do I look to Christ and to Christ-like people who see me as Christ-like and see who I am? Do I determine my value based on that? That's what God wants to say to each one of us. We are His child. We are beautiful. He doesn't see the disfigurement. He doesn't see the overeating. He doesn't see the scars. He doesn't see the internal organs. He doesn't see the fat. None of this. He sees us perfected in heaven. The answer is disengaging and turning our back on the people who would judge us according to the world standard and choosing the people who say, you are beautiful. Thank you, guys. That makes sense. Now, I'm going to tell you this is a struggle, and I'll tell you why. My girls in Celebrate Recovery that I've shared with know my struggle. Because my parents, I was never beautiful enough for them. My aunts, my grandmother, they would say things out loud. Okay? Oh, she has such a cute face. Which even then, that wasn't true. I had a honking nose. I mean, I would not let anyone near me. This is not my original nose. I had my dad's big, huge nose. And so I would literally put my hand up to the side and I wouldn't let people see me from the side. And so sure enough, my mom, she took me to go get a nose job when I was 15. I thought it would make all the difference in the world. No, it didn't. Still nobody found me beautiful. I have to make this choice. I'm preaching to myself this morning. I have to every day make this choice because as I tell the girls about all of the people who have rejected me throughout my life because I was not beautiful, they have started calling me beautiful. They speak to me the words beautiful. And I am unable to believe them. I think they're just being nice. They're just being my friend. And I invalidate what they say to me, because it's not a man. Because I was told by my own father, Penny, guys like pretty girls, and I just don't want you to be disappointed. He didn't mean that in a hard way, and I thought I was over that, but I guess I'm not. Because the statement that he told me when I was wearing my school jacket, he says, you look like a football player from behind. I still hear that in my head. And it still stabs like a knife. I want to be free from this. I want to see myself as
beautiful. I don't want to look in the mirror and compare myself to a standard that isn't even real. Even the celebrities and the models, they take their pictures and then they airbrush them. And they change their dimensions and they change their skin and they change everything. It doesn't exist. Why do I still keep turning to the world to determine my worth and my beauty? It's sheer stupidity. I have to turn to God. I have to let go of decades of garbage that has been fed into me by my parents, my relatives, school children, teenagers, and even adults. And today, by faith, I declare myself beautiful. And I ask God to show me, when he looks at me, show me my spiritual body. That's who he sees. That's who I want to learn to see. That's why God said, when I started this journey almost a year ago, June 16th will be a year of dealing with my eating disorder and having victory over it. And when I couldn't lose the weight and still cannot seem to lose the weight and keep it off in the way that I want, still can't hit that elusive 30 pounds after a year because I start exercising and then my weight goes up. He said, stop it, when I had made myself sick over it. He said, this is not about you losing weight. This is not about how you look. This is about obedience. I just want you to have self-discipline. And I want you to listen to me and obey me, whether there is a result to it or not. So that's what this past year has been a journey on. Listening and obeying, even if I don't look like the picture in the pill ad. So this morning, I'm going to open it up. We're interactive here. I'm going to pray for anybody else who wants to disengage from their determination to judge themselves by the world's completely unrealistic and unattainable standards. And for God to supernaturally give you the vision of yourself as you are in heaven, seated with Christ at the right hand of God the Father, and that we can be free, that we can finally be okay with ourselves and love ourselves the way we are. I'm going to turn this off, but I want you guys to come up and I want to pray over you.